This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Raise Your Game, good morning. I'm Tasha Fusil, and today we're going to find out how to go about getting in a person's good graces. And we're going to do that with former FBI Special Agent Jack Schaefer, who wrote a book called The Like Switch, which is essentially a handbook filled with these proven strategies on how to instantly read people and influence how they perceive you. The first thing people probably want to know is, what was it like working as an FBI agent?
Yeah, most people are curious because they don't have very much interaction with FBI agents. And it's a fun job, and I work primarily in counterintelligence, so I spent most of my time catching spies, and that's how the book came about, because I used a lot of my skills to, you know, get people to talk to me and get people to work with me, and those same skills can be translated into personal relationships. Right. So I thought if I took the on-the-job skills that I had, convert them over to skills that everybody can use in their daily lives, it would be helpful to get people to learn how to communicate more effectively and develop relationships. People do, you know, we can turn on the light switch when we meet people. I mean, we do that a lot. And a lot of things in the book, we do normally and naturally, but we don't know we're doing them. And so what we wanted to do with the book was to alert people to the things that they do every day in their lives, and they don't realize they're doing them. And once we give those things a name and identify those nonverbal behaviors and verbal behaviors, then they could actually flip the light switch on or turn the light switch off.
What's an example of a behavior or something that we do every day that we may not be aware is something that we're doing to switch on that light switch?
Yeah, there's basically, I call them friend signals. And there's three basic friend signals. The first one is the eyebrow flash. And what the eyebrow flash is when we approach each other, there's a quick up and down movement of the eyebrow, of the eyebrows. And that indicates to the other person that they're not a threat. So it's a long distance signal as you approach people to let them know that you're not a threat. And it lasts about 1/64th of a second. Very brief. But our brain picks that up. And when somebody eyebrow flashes us, we reciprocate the eyebrow flash to tell them that we're not a threat to them. And what I find amazing is when I tell these, you know, when I let people know about what they do, they come back and they go, my gosh, Mr. Schaefer, I've been eyebrow flashing my whole life and I never realized it. And I catch myself eyebrow flashing now and I see eyebrow flashes everywhere I go. It's just a nonverbal signal to let us know that we're not threatening to somebody else and reciprocate that we're not a threat to them. The second thing is the head tilt. When we talk to people, we tilt our head to the left and to the right. And the reason we do that is we expose the carotid artery, and that's the most vulnerable part of our body. And what we're telling other people is with our tilted heads is that we don't fear that they're going to cut our carotid artery, that very sensitive part of our anatomy. And, you know, when I make reference to this is, especially dogs for pets, as soon as the owner opens the door, the pet generally sits there and he'll tilt his head one way or to the other. And that's letting the owner know that the pet is not a threat to the owner. Or the dog will flip over and expose the underbelly, which is the most vulnerable part of an animal. So those are just signals that we send each other. And the last one, I think the most powerful one, is the smile. And what happens physiologically when we smile is we release endorphins. And that endorphins makes us feel good about ourselves. So when we smile, it's very difficult for people not to return that smile. And so when there's the reciprocation of that smile, the other person feels good about themselves. So these are just ways we exchange nonverbal signals as we go through life. And, you know, when you really, really see it is in the morning when you pass by each other, you say, typically you go, hi, how you doing? And the other person goes, hi, how are you doing? The second time you see that person during that day, you don't have to say, hey, how you doing? What you typically do, we'll do an eyebrow flash, or guys typically will do a chin jut. That's the when the chin comes out slightly and moves up slightly. And those are just nonverbal signals. So those are some of the things that we do all the time, but we just don't realize we're doing them. And that's kind of the basis for when you want to meet people. So when you approach people in a social relationship or the, like a dating situation, what you want to do is make sure that you eyebrow flash, tilt your head, and you smile. And this is particularly important when you go on a job interview. Because when we go into job interviews, we're typically anxious and nervous. And when the body's anxious and nervous, it doesn't automatically send out friend signals because there's a threat out there. And that's what that anxiety is. It represents that threat. So when people walk into job interviews, what happens is the employer will look at them and say, there's something about that person I don't like. I don't know what it is. I can't put my finger on it, but there's something there. And that's because that people aren't eyebrow flashing, tilting their head, and smiling. So what I tell my students, especially when they go into job interviews, yes, you'll be nervous, but you have to make sure that you eyebrow flash, tilt your head, and smile to let your employer know that you're not a threat. And then he'll pick that up. And the beauty of this is if you do it, people don't notice. They only notice when you don't send friend signals.
So some of these gestures that you're talking about, these signals, they're quite primal. They sound like, you know, especially, you know, the exposure of the carotid artery. And they're very subtle, like you said, right? People don't notice them. Are people skeptical about the efficacy or the effect that something is as subtle as a head tilt can have?
Yeah, and it is very subtle. And you know what I tell people? Look at it in your life. I mean, if, like you say, some people may be skeptical. And I say, don't believe me. Don't trust me. Observe the behaviors for yourself when you go through your daily life. Mostly everyone that is skeptical comes back and has told me, I can't believe that I saw all the things you told me about. And especially I caught myself eyebrow flashing people. So it's not a matter of whether it's believable or not. It's just a matter of make the observations and judge for yourself.
So this is something that you learned while you were working as an agent in the FBI. For your particular department, it was counterintelligence. I mean, how did something like this come into the equation?
My goal is either to get someone to confess mm-hmm. or get them to work with us. And they call those double agents. So when I talk to people, I don't necessarily like the people I talk to all the time. Mm-hmm. So what I want to do is create an environment where that person feels comfortable. Because if that person doesn't like me, they're not going to work with me. They're not going to provide me with information that I need. So my goal is to quickly build rapport, get that person to like me, and then we can start working together. And isn't that true when we meet our significant others for the first time? We meet people on the job, our colleagues, new colleagues. We want to quickly build rapport. And then once rapport is built, then we can work with each other a lot easier than if we didn't like one another. There's other ways that you can use to create common ground. And basically, there's three ways. Common ground's a powerful rapport builder. And one of the ways is called contemporaneous. That means we share something similar at the same time. It's like, I'm in the FBI, you're in the FBI at the same time, so we share something contemporaneously. You like something, if I like the same thing, we share that contemporaneously. The second one is temporal, which means time. And we share something across time. I was in the FBI, you're in the FBI now. So over time, we share something. You visited my city, I visited your city, and we have it over time. Like, I could tell you right now, I visited Kuala Lumpur 20 years ago. Then we share what? That common ground over time, even though it was 20 years ago, we still share that common ground over time. And the last one is vicarious, and that's when you live through somebody else. So we don't have anything in common, but we know a mutual friend, or we know somebody that shares some common ground with you. Like I could say my brother's into radio. He does radio shows, if that's in fact what he does. So now we have common ground.
And I suppose us doing this, it comes out quite naturally in conversations when we first meet people as well. We're trying to establish that common ground, whether we realize it or not.
Oh, yeah. I mean, you know, this is the beauty of the book is we've just taken what normal people do when they first meet people and develop relationships and rapport. We've just taken, identified all the verbal and nonverbal cues that people do when they normally meet people and make friends. We've identified those behaviors, and now this helps people when they want to make friends, right, when they want to communicate effectively. And especially in today's tech world, we tend to live in our own little tech worlds, our little tech bubbles. And the younger folks have a more difficult time talking face-to-face with people. But when you read the like switch, that tells you all the things you should be doing that you haven't been because you've been online. So it gives them kind of a short circuit to learning about human relationships.
Well, these are some great suggestions to make that initial approach or that initial point of contact with someone that you want to develop a relationship with, whether it's a stranger, whether it's a potential client or a team member. What do you do from there? How can you develop that rapport even further?
I'm going to give you a technique that works 100% of the time. That's one of the few things I can say work 100% of the time.
Okay.
And that is this. If you want people to like you, you make them feel good about themselves. And this, for example, is if every time that you met me, I made you feel good about you, you would want to come be with me again. And it's very hard for us to do because most people are egocentric. They think about themselves. The world revolves around them. But the goal is focus on the other person. And that makes them feel good about themselves. And that kind of ties in with the smile. If we smile at somebody and they smile back, they get a shot of endorphins. Endorphins make you feel good about yourself. What have we just done? We've made them feel good about themselves. And that increases the probability that they're going to like us. The next thing you can do is something called an empathic statement. And that, again, keeps the focus on the other person. And you always start your empathic statements with "so you," because you don't want to talk about you. You want to talk about the other person. And what you do with an empathic statement is you take the words that people say, the emotions they're feeling, or their physical status, use parallel words, and mirror it back to them using "so you." And I tell my students you can practice this anytime or anywhere. For example, when you get on the elevator and you see somebody smiling, you say, "So, you've had a good day."
Right.
That smile means they've had a good day. And you're keeping the focus on them, and that makes them feel good about themselves. And they're going to like you because you are focusing on the other person.
Jack Schaefer, the author of The Like Switch. We'll find out what we can do when we're in a negotiation or in a conflict when we come back. This is Raise Your Game, BFM 89.9. Good morning, you're listening to Raise Your Game. I'm Tasha Fusil, and we're looking at some of the simple verbal and nonverbal techniques that Jack Schaefer, a former FBI special agent, used to read people and gain influence, which are compiled in his book, The Like Switch. So, Jack, what are some things that we can observe when we are listening to another person or in conversation with another person?
Definitely, you want to look for the big three, the eyebrow flash, the head tilt, and the smile. And then you want to look for open posture, people that are open posture, looking at you, and there's no blocking between you and the other person. I see this in social situations where you have two people want to meet each other, a guy and a girl. And the girl might be sitting at the bar and the guy goes up to her. And what she's doing is putting a purse between her and the person she's talking to. That's a barrier. We put barriers in front of people that we don't like or that we feel threatened by. We turn away from that person. So a good dynamic would be face to face and leaning inward towards one another. That would be a good dynamic. If you don't have that position, then that rapport needs to be developed a bit more. And the person we're talking to puts that cup between us, that forms a barrier. That signals that perhaps we don't have as good a rapport as we like. Then after you build more rapport with that person, you'll notice that they'll place that cup to one side or the other, thus what? Removing that barrier between us. And also a good example of that is when you see people sitting in restaurants, what's the first thing they do? They remove everything from the center of that table over to the side of the table because they don't want anything between the person that they like.
How about when you're in a negotiation situation? What are some things to look out for in that situation?
Here's what I look for. It's called the lip purse. And what the lip purse is a slight pushing out of the lips. And what that means is a person has formed a negative opinion about what you just said. So if I'm negotiating with somebody and I start talking about price and I see the lips purse, that means that person has formed a negative opinion about my price that I just offered. So the key here is it's kind of like mind reading. I know what that person's thinking. But the trick here is if you can get that person to change their mind before they articulate their opposition, they're more likely to change their mind, because there's a psychological principle of consistency, which means if you state something out loud, it's very difficult for you to change your mind. So, for example, I'm negotiating with you over a car, and I say, I would like this particular price, and I see that your lips are pursed. I would say, so you may think I'm asking too much for my car, but it's got a lot of added features, and I put a lot of maintenance into the car, and it hasn't been driven very far. The miles are low. So I'm trying to convince you that the high price I'm asking is good. So I'm trying to get you to change your mind before you say, no, that price is too high. I'm not buying the car. And there's the lip bite, and that's the slight pull of the lip. And that typically means that you want to say something, but for whatever reason, you're a little reluctant. So then I would look at you and I would see a lip bite, and I would say, you'd like to say something, but you're not sure it may be received well. Why don't you go ahead and tell me what you have to say? And that person is going like, wow, how did he know I had something to say? I mean, there's a lot of things you can do in negotiations, but these are some of the things. And another thing is mirroring. When people are in good rapport, if they're good friends, they will mirror one another. So if I'm in negotiations and that person is mirroring me, that means that we have good rapport. And once good rapport has been established, I'm more likely to make a sale. And here's how that works. I would walk into the room. I would mirror that other person to let them know that I like them. And then after so many minutes of rapport building, I will change positions. And if that person changes their position within 2 to 3 seconds, that means that we have rapport that's been established. And one of the ways I tell my students is, if you're standing around in a group and you're friends, you all will mirror one another's behaviors, one another's gestures. And if you want to test it, what you can do is just change your posture, and within several seconds, everybody is going to mirror your new posture. So that's a way you can test that yourself to see that, in fact, does work.
Well, another situation where awareness of what to do would be good is when you're in a very sensitive situation that could lead to, like, you know, the flaring of emotions. You know, what would you do when you're sort of dealing with anger, and how do you assess where to go when you're in that conversation?
The first thing you want to do, if you think somebody's angry about something, the first thing you want to do is provide an explanation. Because people get angry and frustrated because their world is not in sync. So something's out of sync, and that being out of sync causes frustration, and then frustration produces anger. So the first thing you want to do is, if you see somebody that you think might be angry, you provide an explanation. This is the reason I'm doing it. This is the reason we do that. This is the reason we're doing this. And, you know, these are the rules. You explain that. You provide that explanation. And then if that doesn't work, then the next thing you want to do is enter into what I call the anger cycle. So the first thing you want to do is, that person's angry. And then after that first burst of anger, there's a pause. Right at that pause, you want to construct an empathic statement. So you're angry because, and then you want to mirror back what they told you. And then that lets them know that you understand how they're feeling, because you're mirroring back to them what they have just told you. And they say, aha, the person's listening to me. Mm-hmm. Then when that happens, people have a tendency to vent. And then at that second venting, you issue another empathic statement. And once that person has the shoulders, the large exhale of the breath, and just the kind of just like this, oh, I'm done. Once you see that, you want to introduce a presumptive statement. And that is a course of action that person has a very difficult time not agreeing with. And that typically takes care of anger. So what you want to do is, because people aren't going to listen to you when they're angry, they put their shields up and nothing gets in. So the first thing you want to do is provide an explanation. And if that doesn't work, you want to go through the anger cycle by using a series of empathic statements, direct them in a presumptive. And if that doesn't work, you go back into the anger cycle again and make another empathic statement and go through the whole three stages again and make another presumptive statement. So that's kind of how you deal with anger. It's very a powerful way to get people to vent their anger and then become open to a course of action that is a win-win for both of you. So So the thing you don't want to do is confront angry people, because then you just get into a shouting contest and nothing gets resolved. So you just want to mirror back to them how they feel.
All the examples that you've given, would they be the same for people you've known for a long time versus people that, you know, complete strangers?
No, you can use these for people that you meet for the first time and in long-term relationships, because that's what you want. If you're angry with me, the first thing you want is for me to validate or acknowledge why you're angry. How could you refuse that? You would accept it. If you're angry about something, I say, so you're angry because you didn't get the raise. You're angry because I did something to cause you to look bad. I did something to cause you to feel bad. Nobody can refuse that empathic statement. And so then they, that person understands me. And then you go through the venting process, and at the end, there's a presumptive. So it works in long-term relationships. In fact, married couples have come back and said, man, you really saved me here, because I got in a fight with my wife the other night, and I used the anger cycle, and it worked like a charm. Yeah, and it's one of those things that they expect people to understand their complaints or their anger.
Right.
And all you're doing is doing that. I mean, I think we've lost touch as humans communicating with one another, because we're so self-focused on our technology. We've kind of really lost that effective way to communicate with one another at the real visceral level. And this just helps the light switch. All it does is it helps people communicate. It helps people look at life. It helps people look at behaviors. It demonstrates the behaviors that they see every day, but they just don't recognize the behaviors they see. So it provides a lot of insight for human behavior.
So it just really snaps you sort of out of your autopilot and just helps you develop that acute awareness of the people that you interact with.
Yeah, and you're right. It's not autopilot. A lot of us are on autopilot, but when you build relationships, good, solid relationships are not on autopilot. It takes a lot of work. It takes a lot of effort. It takes a lot of focusing on the other person and not me. So, yeah, good relationships take effort. And all we're doing in the light switch is giving people the tools that they need to get down to do the hard work of building relationships.
Well, thank you so much, Jack. It was a pleasure to speak to you. Jack Schaefer, author of The Light Switch, speaking to us about how to be more aware of the behavioral patterns and nonverbal cues that we all display when we're communicating. This has been Raise Your Game, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.